Welcome to the Smart Tech Check podcast, hosted by Mark Vina, your home for candid, insightful, and provocative conversations about the smart home, home automation, security, smartphones, PC and console gaming, and much more.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mark Vina, host of the Smart Tech Check podcast. Today is Friday, April 12th, 2024. Joining me for today's podcast are John Quain, who writes for the New York Times, Smart Cities, and Tom's Guide, Stuart Walpin, who is standing in front of a hostage video background, describes Popular Mechanics, AARP, Techlicious, Investopedia, and other fine publications, and Rob Pettereau, fan of the 5 and 7 Washington Nationals, who writes for Tech Developments at PC Mag, Fast Company, and other publications. Guys, how are you today?
Very good.
I apologize for the hostage video. I'm between computers at the moment, and there you go.
Can you hold up a copy of today's New York Times, please?
What, paper?
That's good. That's, you know, Rob is on his game today. Well, hey, guys, let's jump into it because we've got a bunch of things that we want to talk about today. You know, one thing we haven't talked about since it kind of occurred since our last podcast was this antitrust lawsuit frivolity. That's the word I'm going to use with the DOJ. I've written about this on Tech News World. I wrote a column about this about two weeks ago. And I'm struggling with it. To me, you know, I've been involved in antitrust lawsuits from a professional standpoint. I was with Compaq when the DOJ had their big massive lawsuit against Microsoft in the early 2000 timeframe. That's always fun when you're with a partner. And they ask you to lock down every email you've ever written. But in this particular case, the document that the DOJ submitted, which is really more of a summary of what their case is going to be all about, I don't see a lot of substance to it. You know, I think that there, you know, I think Apple is going to assemble a very reasonable and a very sturdy defense to each of the different charges that the DOJ has been accusing them of. And honestly, from a macro standpoint, I want to ask each of you for your perspective. I kind of get the feeling that much of this is political, and all these cases are political, but much of this seems to be political. And I just get this feeling that that, you know, Apple is being punished for being successful. And don't get me wrong, if there's some evidence that surfaces that Apple has been engaging in bona fide anti-competitive behavior, well, let's see what that data looks like. But I haven't seen it so far, you know, so I'm going to let John kind of tee off on this one to get his perspective. But I'm just not impressed with what the DOJ has submitted publicly yet.
John? Right. I mean, it's certainly not as egregious as the Microsoft case. And that was a case from which Microsoft should have been split up. I think no one doubts that fact. Right. And they certainly were guilty of every predatory practice a monopoly could be guilty of at the time. And they almost got broken up. Didn't quite happen. Is this a case like that? No, it's not nearly as egregious to your point. You know, look, they have some great products and the way they tie them together makes them function better. There's no question about that. And can you switch to another product? That's a little, yes, I could go and buy an Android. I'm on an Android phone. I love Android phones, but you definitely can switch. Is it easy? No. Could they make it easier? Yeah, I think, but this is a case where everybody has their kind of Seinfeld joke about, did you ever notice what Apple did about blank, you know? And mine is, did you ever notice about Apple and NFC chips, right? I think all the banking institutions and credit card companies should have access to that. Blocking them from that, that starts to look like, I'm really trying to monopolize something here. But everybody's going to have something like that, I think, in a case like this. The DOJ has thrown in everything but the kitchen sink. So I think everybody's going to be like, yeah, there's that thing that always bugs me. Rob's probably got a whole laundry list, I'm sure.
Well, you know, I look at things like, I want Rob to go next. But when I think of like Standard Oil, which is like your kind of your poster child case for antitrust act in the early part of the last century, if Standard Oil only worked if the oil they produced only worked with certain types of cars and they favored those automobile manufacturers, you know, with gasoline that was kind of that was refined from it. Well, maybe there you could, that was problematic. And of course, they used other mechanisms to monopolize the market. But I just don't, again, I don't see it here. And I think the key thing that you mentioned, John, was people have choice. It's not like, well, if I don't buy an iPhone, I can't buy a smartphone. So, Rob, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm here. See, Apple forced me to buy this Google Pixel. I think part of it is the whole definition of monopoly in this case. DOJ has come up with this.
Hey, Rob, do you have your microphone selected on the webcam? Because you sound like you're...
Should be camera audio.
You sound a little distant. That's all.
No, this better. Technology. Apple is screwing with this as well. I'm speaking to you all through a mini. It's all their fault. Performance smartphone market, which is this.
It's
a high end smartphone market, premium smartphone market, and that's where they get to 70%, which. 70%, 30% is not actually that close to a monopoly as I think most people would see it. I think the DOJ complaint does a good job of outlining a lot of greedy rent-seeking behavior, most of which is not new. I could dig up pieces I wrote literally like 13 years and change ago about how Apple is just in seeking to get 30 cents of every digital dollar spent on the App Store. Apple is, it's not a good look. And, you know, it's already gotten them in trouble with the European Union. But, you know, is this a case of monopoly versus this company is behaving like a jerk? I don't know how well this is going to hold up. I think it is certainly not as strong as a case as what the DOJ has brought against Google for its display ads business. So I don't know. If I had to guess, I would venture that since Apple has already done the engineering work to open up the iOS to sideloading and competitive app stores in the EU, they'll offer something like that in the US as well.
Yeah, no, I agree with that observation. And I always get the impression with these type of lawsuits is that when the DOJ throws everything but the kitchen sink at a company, it's a strategy attempt that says, well, maybe they'll settle based on these
two or three. If you only get hit in the head with the faucet, so it's still going to hurt.
Yeah.
Fond legal advice. Stuart, what do you think?
Well, I agree with the whole idea of exactly how you're defining monopoly. I think the Microsoft case, as you have pointed out, was far more egregious in terms of them really controlling the Office software and the PC marketplace, which is simply not the case here. I mean, in the U.S., Apple is around 50% of the market. In the rest of the world, it's less than a third of the market, so there is plenty of choice. Apple has a software program that eases your transition to Android if you wanted to do that. There are a couple of things here that I don't know, annoy me is the right word for it. Apple knew this was coming. This was not a surprise to Apple. They're not exactly shy on the legal side. And they've been addressing a lot of these issues over the last 4 or 5 years that the DOJ has included in there that now seem irrelevant for the most part. Apple has also been sued privately on a lot of these issues and for the most part has won those battles. I think also a lot of this is perception. The whole 30 cents of every dollar is not pervasive throughout its system. Actually, I think the last number I saw was only 15% of companies actually pay that 30%. A lot of developers pay absolutely nothing. There's the whole issue of the super app inclusion that DOJ is talking about, which is simply not the case. And I've seen a lot of people complaining that the DOJ suit just sounds like a list of fanboy complaints, you know, the green bubble on texting and things like that. It just reads like a grievance list from Android users or even from Apple users who are complaining about functionality more than anything that's actually legal that Apple needs to address. I'm sure that the DOJ will dig up instances where Apple has acted hinky, shall we say. Certainly going back to when Steve Jobs was still alive. We all know that Steve Jobs was was with his distortion reality zone, really wanted to protect it.
Hey folks, this is Mark Vina, CEO of Smart Tech Research. Smart Tech Research is proud to have Aura sponsoring my Smart Tech Check podcast. Aura security software is the all-in-one digital safety net for the whole family. It's literally like having a personal cyber guardian that protects all of the devices in your home on a 24/7 basis. What's more, its AI functionality stands out as it constantly learns and adapts to threats, keeping your family and you safe around the clock. It's a must-have solution for anyone serious about online security. Stay tuned for a special no-obligation promo offer for Aura that will give you cybersecurity peace of mind.
Hi, I'm Anna with Smart Tech Research. Whether you're browsing the web, checking emails, monitoring your children's online behavior, spam calls and identity protection, and conducting online transactions, Aura has your back, ensuring a secure and seamless experience every time. Aura's comprehensive security solutions are compatible with Microsoft Windows, Apple Mac OS, Android, iOS, and iPad OS devices. For an exclusive 14-day no-obligation trial version of Aura, use the on-screen QR code or visit the website shown here. Aura is the smart, simple way to stay safe online.
The other side of this is, as all things governmental, I'm just afraid that the DOJ is going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. A lot of what Apple does is to protect security. Their whole, you know, mission is to make sure that their system maintains security and privacy above all else. And a lot of what DOJ is complaining about would erode that.
Which is why sideloading to me is a bit disturbing because
right. And I think what they've done in Europe is I think they've created a separate site for sideloading.
Right. Well, I want to move on to the next topic, but the only thing I will leave you guys with, because we're going to be talking about this again. Wait till you see some of the emails that come out. You know, Stuart, you mentioned the whole they're going to resurrect some not poor, but Steve Jobs emails from.
Well, they have Tim Cook saying buy your mom an iPhone as an answer to someone's complaint about iOS supporting only the worst possible text-based messaging.
I'm telling you, Rob, you're absolutely right. Because there's going to be emails that come out that by itself probably will not prove antitrust behavior, but they sound so egregious that it's really emotional. You know, when you have, like, for example, lawyers work for companies, do not send an email from a marketing person to a partner that says, we want to destroy the competition. Let's do this, this, and this. And that by itself may not be antitrust, but it shows malice. So we're gonna see what happens there. Let's hit the next topic. And this is something I want Stuart and John to zero in on. Apparently Sony has new Bravia TVs that come out. I'm actually in the market for a brand new TV myself. I know that Roku now, who's formally gotten into the TV business. Maybe we should start with Roku to get your opinion. Is that it looks like they have some very fine TVs, especially the new ones that they've just announced. But John, let me start with Stuart.
Well,
would you buy a Roku TV, not a TCL TV, but a Roku TV over TCL? Go ahead.
Well, the way that Roku is approaching this is that they believe that TV is now equal to streaming, that streaming has gotten to the mature market level that people associate streaming with TV, and there's no bigger name in streaming set-top boxes than Roku. So they're leveraging the fact that people will think of Roku when they think of streaming to buy a TV, as opposed to thinking about a TV maker like the traditional Samsung, LG, Sony TV makers who have to adopt their own system, their own smart TV system, whether it be Android or web TV for LG or whatever. The other part of this is, which I found interesting for both the Roku side and the LG side, is how mature the mini LED technology has suddenly become. It was only a couple of years ago was this exotic new technology, but now I think it's gotten to the point where, from a pure technical point of view, it's not quite equal to OLED, and there's a lot of different ways that you could do mini LED, but it's gotten a whole lot better, where a consumer can go into a store and look at an OLED and a mini LED side by side and see that the mini LED is half the price of the OLED and go, sure, that looks almost as just as good, you know, the dreaded good enough, that I think it's going to cause OLED a lot of problem in the mainstream market. especially what we saw, John and I saw at the Sony presentation. I think some of their demonstrations, as always, were a little hinky. They were comparing their top-of-the-line mini LED with the entry-level LG OLED, and I have an LG OLED, and it didn't look like that. So, but I do believe that there is a parity that is beginning to be reached in terms of quality level that will make it more difficult for consumers to buy strictly on picture quality when one set is twice as much as the other, and it's really hard to discern the difference between the two of them.
Yeah. So, John, Rob, of course, Stuart didn't answer your question. Would you buy a Roku Series Pro TV versus
Roku specifically? At this point, I would not.
Yeah, just they're a relatively new player with their own TVs, you know, and I've looked at the price point. The feature sets are pretty compelling. They're QLED TVs. You know, would you? And we're all familiar with. And I'm a big fan of TCL. Given
you froze up a little bit.
Yeah, we're losing him.
So I'll try to answer that. So I am a little bearish on Roku right now because of this whole recent story about how they had a terms of service update where if you didn't accept it, you'd get locked out of your TV.
Right.
Not a fan of that. I think in general, because people keep TVs for so long, one thing I'm trying to keep an eye out for is what's like the end of life scenario. So one thing I like about what we're talking about Sony, Google's Google TV software, you can set it so it essentially reverts back to being just a monitor. And the smart apps don't work or anything, but on the other hand, the thing can sort of retire gracefully and you don't have this massive attack surface of an unupdated TV platform fully connected and online to the internet. I like that. And, you know, Roku, among other things, they need to stop doing customer hostile things like a TOS that might break your TV and have some good answer to that because TVs do stick around a while. Right. I'm in the market for one myself. And so tell me more about these Sony mini LEDs. Like, for one thing, do they hold up better to a bright room than OLED screens do?
Yeah, it depends. It depends. Yes, it depends. So there are some really terrible mini LED. Just one thing about the technology, it's not really a change in the technology. It's just more of the backlights that are more addressable. But it's a far cry from what we actually want, which is micro LED, a different technology that does offer a really super sharp picture. So OLED's still the king. It's just,
I'm going to buy.
Yeah, I mean, it's still the king and OLED sets if you can afford them. And the mini LEDs we're talking about, which are close to an OLED set, are also wicked expensive. I mean, it is great. And look, Sony makes some of the best TVs in the market, always has for decades, continues to do so. Their fidelity of color fidelity is excellent and extraordinary, no question about it. Always worth the money. You're not going to go wrong if you get one, you know, no question about that. What I thought, Stuart, was interesting is this movement they started at Sony a couple of years ago, which was they have, you know, each TV has these preset modes. You go over to your grandmother's house and it's like, it's all fluorescent day glow because they've left it in standard modes. Sony took this new approach a couple of years ago. The standard mode would be basically a movie mode, would be a much better, more faithful, less brilliant, less artificial looking picture. And they wanted to compare their standard mode against other people's standard modes. And of course, they look a lot better when you do that because everybody else is still doing the old stuff. It's an interesting approach. I've noticed a couple of other manufacturers are starting to do that too. Actually, Roku brought this very issue up and said in their new sets, look, people don't adjust the picture. They just don't. So they never switch it into movie mode. So they're watching that terrible picture on the very expensive TV they just bought. So they're also taking that approach saying, you know what, forget that old standard mode. We're going to try and make it as accurate as possible in that standard mode. So, cause people leave it in that mode. So they're all about minimal settings, Roku TVs. If you have one, you can't change a lot and make a lot of adjustments to them. And consumers seem to like that. So it's a new approach. As to your question about would I buy a Roku TV? I don't know. I haven't tested a Pro Series yet.
I want an answer to that question. I want an answer.
the Sony sets are now. What's our embargo date, Stuart? I'm not allowed. Are we allowed to talk about
the embargo? Is the 17th, but I don't think the TVs are actually going to be in stores until July, from what I heard. But I believe our embargo date is the 17th.
Okay, so they have some improvements that I think were pretty good. They also have the soundbar improvement. Embargo shmargo. Zoom feature on dialogue, and that actually worked. They were demonstrated two soundbars, and you could finally hear what the people were saying. So you would like no more using the subtitles on Netflix. It actually works. So I think, but again, you know, good lineup, but we'll see. Ask me in 2 months when I test the new Pro Series.
Well, the one thing I want to push back on the Roku set, it's not that they're adjusting the standard mode. What they're doing is an automatic, or so I can't remember what they call it. It's a smart mode where the TV changes its settings for the type of content that it senses is being played. So when it sees that you're watching sports, it switches into vivid mode. If you're watching a movie, it goes into movie mode. And you as a user can go in and change those individual settings, but the TV by default will automatically switch the settings depending upon the content you're looking. So like John mentioned, it's they're doing stuff for the most understanding that people will not change it by themselves.
Right. And we'll, you know, some sets that do that already, it doesn't work so well.
Again, yeah. With John, I have to wait till we get our hands on one to see how it actually works in the real world.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we got to hit the next topic, but if one of you guys want to send me your sample after you play with it, I will send you my address. Rob, you wanted to bring up this digital privacy bill. Because it's something
that you've heard this before, because you have.
Yes. Go ahead.
Hope Springs Eternal. We have yet another bipartisan comprehensive digital privacy bill. This one is called the American Privacy Rights Act, APRA, or APRA, introduced by Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers, Republican of Washington, and Senator Maria Cantwell, Republican of Washington, Democrat of Washington. And it's not too different from last year's Big Hope for Privacy, which was actually the most promising bill of 2 years ago. Once again, it offers things like, you know, you have the right to opt out of targeted advertising. You have the right to see and correct information companies have collected about you. There are data breach notification rules. There's a whole segment about data brokers, which seems to have been copied from a bill that went nowhere a couple of years ago, which would set up a do not track list where data brokers would have to register with the Federal Trade Commission. And you could say, I do not want my information collected, you know, processed and sold by these companies, and they would have to honor it. I actually read that bill and it looked like a good piece of work. And at the time they said, this was Senator, the younger senator from Georgia, Senator from Louisiana, another bipartisan bill. Anyways, a lot of good ideas in here. It also preempts most state privacy laws, not all of them, but that is something where some representatives from California might not be happy. But, you know, we live in a society here. If we're going to have a federal law, it can't just allow every state privacy law to still be around, because one thing I've heard over and over again, and certainly at the ad industry's policy conference in D.C. last week, no one likes a state-by-state patchwork. And so something's got to give. Either we're all just going to play by California rules, or we can actually have Congress do something. And there's the problem, because this Congress can, they would struggle to rename a post office at this point. So the odds of this going anywhere on election year are not great.
Right.
Though I like it, I think we need something. It is absurd that you have people saying privacy is such a big issue in relation to specific aspects like TikTok or Meta or whatever, and not address this huge absence in the policy landscape.
So, John, your thoughts just in time for this movie Civil War?
Right, I would love to see it. To our audience too, about why a privacy bill like this is, we still keep trying to scare consumers and people about it, is consider the recent I wrote an article in 2017 in the New York Times about the use of private data from your car and subsequent issues, and people freaked out about it. And at the time, GM decided to change their approach and change their user agreement back. Now, lo and behold, fast forward to 2024, what is GM doing? They've gone back again, and they were using the private data from your car, unbeknownst to the people driving the cars, and using that data to sell to LexisNexis. They sold it, which they said they wouldn't do in 2017, sold it to LexisNexis, and then LexisNexis turned around and hammered everybody that was on that. So your bill went up, just an individual bill. It's not aggregated data. This is you, Al Franken, who gets hit with this data. All very deceptive kind of practice. Mm. Also, bad data. We've shown in the industry, in the automotive industry, that data about hard brakes and hard acceleration does not translate into higher insurance bills or more accidents. So it's bad data. They're just raising your bill because they've got that. And of course, when it was exposed by the New York Times saying, hey, they're using your data, GM backpedaled and changed their policy again, which is not to say they won't change it back 2 months from now when the heat is off, because that's what they did before. So that's why this data and privacy really does matter. It hits people on an individual level. They're just not aware that it's being used against them. And these data brokers that that Rob mentioned, well, we're here at NTT. Great show. We'll get to that and some really interesting technology. And one of the technologies was to look at transportation systems, and what they do is they buy aggregated data from these data brokers, which is super valuable to doing urban planning and transportation. But then you look at the data they're able to buy and you're holy mackerel what they have on people. So yeah, I'm with Rob though. I guess I'm kind of cynical. I'd love to see this pass, but and she's not even going to make it. She's not going to run again, is she? The Republican.
Morris Rogers is retiring among the many Republicans. So, yeah, I know that this bill does have provisions saying that if there's a change in the terms of service, the company has to let you know, and they have to get your permission to do anything new with your data. They can't just be like, here's 6,000 words of TOS, click accept. you can opt out of algorithmic processing of your data for consequential decisions. Insurance is one of them. I think they did their homework. This looks like a good piece of legislation.
Yeah.
That deserves a fair hearing. And yep. Yeah, I hope we have a Congress worthy of it at some point.
Yeah.
Stuart?
Well, I have a couple of personal things that happened just today, which illustrate the need for this. The first thing, when I was signing on to join the podcast today, I had to open up Google on my phone. And I got asked a couple of questions like, Google would like to have access to your desktop files. And I went, what? I'm opening a browser. Why would I give you access to my desktop files? And the second thing that happened, I don't give my cell phone number out to very many people. My family has it and a few of my friends, and that's about it. And there are some sites that force you to put your cell phone in there, like ticket agencies, you know, when you're buying tickets, so they can send you e-tickets and that sort of thing. Well, lately I've been inundated with political asks for money through a text on my phone. I'm going, where did you get my phone number to send me a text? I don't remember giving it to you. And so I think these two incidents, just from a personal point of view, tell me that legislation is needed. But in all things governmental, as I said before, I am just afraid that the people, even though Rob seems fairly sanguine about, you know, the legislation, I am just so worried that they don't know what they're doing. And not that they'll make it worse, but they could make it worse.
Right. Wow. Well, like that never happens in Washington.
But no, never.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of distressing that a piece of legislation, I mean, any bill that gets passed in a bipartisan way deserves attention. Because that's an accomplishment in today's politics, but we'll see what happens. But something has to be done. There's hodgepodge across the country where certain states have more stringent laws than other states. It ain't working, you know. And once we start seeing AI roll out, wow, we'll be having this discussion again. Let's hit the last topic. I'm going to start with this, and then I'm going to hand it over to John, because we were both at the NTT Upgrade event in San Francisco for the last couple of days. Yeah, he's still there.
Yeah.
NTT is a very interesting company. I think that's fair to say, John. It's a company that most Americans don't know who they are. This was the research arm of NTT Telecom, which has a primary presence in Japan, but they have also a presence in the United States and Europe with telecom infrastructure being photonics, which is essentially uses light transmission to transmit data in a very close to near latency effect, which opens up a number of different incredible worlds from a potential application standpoint. I won't get into it, but the thing that I will say, and John, you and I were kind of chatting about this, NTT is such an interesting organization because they essentially, you know, it's a kind of a classic Japanese presentation. There were some fine presentations, but sometimes things get lost in translation from a language standpoint. But here's a company that had 25 or 30 really interesting demos in ALS. That was, I think, pretty intriguing. Cardiovascular activity, AI twins in that regard. Things that you would not normally associate with either them or either any company in the telecom sphere. So I found it very educational. They seem to be a very interesting company in terms of being willing to accept feedback. And so I'm always, this is my second or third NTT upgrade event. And I always learn something, which is, again, something I think that's fabulous, you know, because let's face it, we go to a lot of events, frankly, where we don't learn things. So, John, what was your perspective of the event?
I thought they were great. I mean, they have a lot of strengths. Obviously, you know, they're the big communications telecom company in Japan with lots of business B2B offerings here in the U.S. and around the world. So that's sort of what they were emphasizing. But the amount of research money they're spending, that was really what the upgrade show was about, to show you all these research projects they have going on. And some of them are quite remarkable. You mentioned the digital twin. I had just been at a bioethics conference at Mount Sinai in New York with doctors who were doing new research, and they were asking me about digital twin. Is that something they could use and what the boundaries would be? But this is low-hanging fruit in the sense of cardiovascular data that you could see what was going to happen or predict eventually who might have cardiovascular problems later on. They're not there yet, but this is the beginning of it. The photosynthesis chips that they showed, which convert, you know, break down the CO2, and photonics that you mentioned, because NTT is number three in the world in terms of the size of their data centers. And when you look at there was a lot of talk about AI and data centers consuming more and more electricity. And if there's any way, you know, this is one measure to reduce the amount of electricity given the exponential growth. So that there was a lot of talk about that. And in terms of cybersecurity, same thing. The data harvesting is scary, scary stuff. So they're using cryptography right now, anticipating that when quantum computers come online, they've got to have something that can beat the quantum computers. So they're already working on that. So fascinating upgrade was what it's called, the conference. Really interesting.
Just real quick, Rob. I don't know if you've read anything.
You glitched out there a little bit.
You glitched out there, Mark.
You were doing a good Max Headroom impersonation, though.
So I was going to give you the opportunity to opine on any.
So NTT data, my comment was, you'll appreciate that they've been in my mind because once again, they've paid to have their logo spray painted on the grass outside the dugouts at Nationals Park. So it's nice to know what the heck they're up to.
Yep. That's good. I'll put that in the commentary and any commentary that I write about the event. Stuart, your thoughts?
I have none on this particular topic.
No thoughts. I will pass it
back to you.
Well, guys, I'll just let it go from there before we glitch out over here. Guys, thanks for taking the time to join me for today's podcast. For our viewing and listening audience, thanks for making the Smart Tech Check podcast part of your day or commute. Please make sure that you hit the like and subscribe buttons at the end of today's podcast or use these convenient on-screen QR codes to connect with me. You can also follow me on X, formerly known as Twitter.